Hello, welcome to the Latest JavaScript Podcast. This is episode number 63, and as always, I have here Arthur Sozins that is a bit with a cold. Hello, Arthur. Feeling better now?
Yeah, much better. I think I will be good in a couple of days, completely.
Yeah, maybe you need to move to a warmer country, so you don't have those problems.
I don't know. I actually prefer cold more than warm, because when you're cold, you can get warmer, but if you are, it's too hot, then it's hard to get colder.
Maybe it's a different challenge, but probably the same work. Anyway, we are here to talk about the JavaScript and what has been happening lately in the JavaScript world. I'll start with an interesting article here that talks about the future of bundling JavaScript modules. And basically, the author, Dr. Axel Rauschmeier, which I think I'm pronouncing his name right, mentions the fact that nowadays we have HTTP2, which is an evolution of HTTP. One of the things that HTTP provides is a means to multiplex the transmission of data over the same channel. This means that, for instance, if you have two requests being sent to the server, to the same server, nowadays the browser will just establish one connection and put the send and receive the request data over that same connection, multiplexing the packets that are exchanged with the server. And this somehow goes to the some things that are done when you use modules and other things that require multiple files. Usually you try to combine multiple files into a single one to request, to reduce the number of requests, but now with HTTP2, that sort of becomes redundant.
Basically, I would just jump in and explain more about the modules. So currently, the most popular format was common JS modules. It's what Node.js is using. It's what Titanium, I think, is using. And it's a way to enclose some kind of JavaScript functionality library in a single file and use export function to export some interface of it. And now with new ECMAScript 6 standards, there are now new native JavaScript modules. And this article discussed probably how would it affect loading of these new modules, because usually you would bundle one library, one module per file, and it would be hard to combine them also, like we do now with production files in JavaScript side. So it would be loading more files, but with HTTP2 it's probably more redundant, as you said. But there are also things called rollup that would allow you to bundle multiple exports into single files, so you would actually be able to concatenate multiple modules up to. But it's hard to say what would be the popular usages now. With HTTP2 becoming popular, yeah, we had much problems with it too, because you need to upgrade to Node.js 5, which is not, I think, yet even stable to use HTTP2, and it's not so popular as or so easily available yet, I think. But
yeah, you should get back to Nginx or Apache.
Yeah, they also need to support it, of course. But
but they support it already. You don't need to change your server-side code.
There are actually things. Well, in HTTP2, it would be the less overhead for requests and stuff like that. And actually, we have an incident that Apple have changed how their server receive data for push notifications. They now receive it in HTTP2. Previously, it was simply socket sending binary data, but now they overcomplicated things, and it's actually working worse than previously.
If you want to use some code that does not support HTTP2, it will not work.
Yeah, basically, I think the only way to send push notifications is now to use the HTTP2 format from Apple. So
yeah, so that's probably an issue also, for instance, for PHP that you probably need. I think there are plans to support HTTP2 in PHP 7. I'm not sure if it is implemented already. I've saw some discussions, but I do not recall what was the outcome. I know there are some people giving talk about HTTP2 with PHP. Well, from the server side point, it's not such an issue because it depends on the web server that you are using. But for instance, to send to web services that don't support HTTP2, that may be a problem. I know that, for instance, curl requests support HTTP2.
So you could use curl and PHP, and that should cover it.
Yeah, but for those that use other types like FSOC OpenO or PHP FOpen, I don't know if that is going to work well already. At least in old versions, it probably won't work well. Anyway, that is a different story. We are here to talk about a thing related with PHP. So
no,
next,
JavaScript.
Sorry, exactly. I was trying to say exactly the opposite. And we are going to start commenting about Parallel.js, which is a library for creating workers. So you can create multi-threaded applications.
Yes.
Have you tried these libraries? What do you think about it?
Well, I can start with talking more about workers. Basically, the worker is a standard already available, I think, in many browsers that would allow you to run a separate JavaScript file in parallel. But the limitation is that it has to be a separate file. So it's not like you're writing code and all in the same file. You're just running a separate file, which probably is not so useful for small tasks. And there are ways to get around that. Like, we have, you can load a raw image through the URL, like through DataUri. So why not you load a raw JavaScript file? So you could reuse that, but there are lots of quirks and stuff to go through that. And I think Parallel.js is actually a library that actually does that. It provides a convenience around it and allows you to define parallel tasks in the same file, some function that would be executed in the worker.
Okay, so basically this is a library to make it things simpler.
Yeah, I think
okay.
It is.
Yeah, so this article here is a tutorial on how to use that library. So if you are interested in creating worker-based applications, maybe you want to take a look at this library. So the next topic is just a brief article by John Resig, creator of jQuery. And basically, he talks about the fact that jQuery reached the 10th anniversary, and it
he
was
says,
originally.
He says today. He says today. Which day was it? Do you know? Which is the actual anniversary day of jQuery?
Well, I don't know. Some people start try to. No, it's January 14th.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why they put the date at the end. There are some people that try to fool Google. It's not the case, but those that do it, they hide the date of the article, so Google doesn't know if the article is old or not. And if Google doesn't know, it doesn't show in the Google results, because some people try to go to search, and if the article is old, they don't go to the article. So they start hiding the dates, but I don't think it is the case. And I think Google now is smarter figuring the publication dates. Anyway, this article is about jQuery, and it just tells that 10 years ago he tried to create this library just to scratch two personal itches, which he mentions that one is to provide a simple interface to interact with the DOM, and then reduce the number of cross-browser issues that exist during development, because there were differences between browsers, and with jQuery, you could actually improve your productivity because you wouldn't have to deal with these issues. Nowadays, you don't have those issues anymore because current browsers support more standard APIs, and there are not so much differences between them.
And you also can interact with the DOM in jQuery similar way without actually jQuery.
Except that is a different syntax. So whoever got used to the jQuery way will continue to use jQuery, and also those that rely on existing plugins will also continue to write applications based on jQuery because they have those plugins ready to use them.
Yeah, probably the plugins, the jQuery UI part is what keeps jQuery quite alive.
Yes, that's basically his conclusion here. So it's interesting. Happy birthday to jQuery. It was actually more than a month ago, but happy birthday anyway. I don't know until when people continue to use jQuery, probably forever, because they sort of entered in a dependency loop, like depending on existing jQuery plugins. So I don't see much that dependency going away. Anyway,
I think even for JS classes, there are more and more jQuery plugins submitted, right?
Yes, many packages nowadays are jQuery plugins. So since they are still objects, they qualify to be published there.
Yeah.
Okay, now next one topic that is probably that means more to you, Arturs, because at least you were, I don't know now, but you were involved in game development, right?
Yeah, I still love game development. I don't have as much time as I used to it, but I still want to create something interesting when I have time. And basically this article, for those who doesn't know, Unity is a cross-platform game development tool that allows you to develop games in 3D, 2D, and anything basically you want. It's very versatile, have lots of extensions and stuff and plugins. And for quite a long time, they provided export to the web, but it was in a Unity player, you would need to install specific add-ons, similarly to like you need to install Flash to run Flash games, you need to install Unity player to run Unity games in the web. But I think there was some recent changes we talked about in some previous podcasts about Chrome and native client that would make Unity player obsolete, so it would not be able to run on newer versions or something like that. And I think that's what this article is about, that now you can export the actual WebGL or JavaScript or HTML5 game from Unity with Unity 5.
Yes, now things became simpler and also more portable, so you don't need the Unity player. And then with this article, you can learn about how do you go with the developing Unity-based projects. And if I'm not mistaken, it also talked about exporting to the web-based versions, right? Using WebGL.
Yeah.
WebGL. Okay. So next topic I want to comment is about an article as an odd structure here that was hard to understand because it sort of mixes links to other articles with topics here. It calls in JavaScript at the scale, achieving high velocity. It talks about many things that what you could follow to achieve high velocity JavaScript applications. The first one that takes the comment is avoid the classical ho-ho patterns. I did not quite figure what they meant by this, because it's not an objection-based, object-oriented programming, but more the use of design patterns based on object-oriented.
Yeah, but there are actually a lot of, I think, the questions like on Stack Overflow, how to create like new instances, how to inherit from them, which is like wanting to use JavaScript as a standard OOP practice when it is actually not. It has more of prototypal stuff, and you need to deal with it in a different way and not to try to convert it to standard OOP. I think that's what at least it means.
Yeah. So the next item here, the guidelines, be extremely lazy, basically to tell you to use what exists. There are like 200,000 modules on NPM, so you should use the existing modules. The next guideline is, if you do not, if you do nothing else, be consistent. This is more to advise you to use tools that allow you to verify if your code complies with certain guidelines, like ESLint. And the next item is about taking advantage of tooling. And, well, I think even ESLint included in the tooling that they mean. But in this case, they mention things like, I don't know, React DevTools, Redux DevTools, that in the article author opinion, they can't be replaced. Well, it tells about tools in general. Then they say keep things as small as possible by breaking your application in small modules. Well, these kind of guidelines are just good practices, not necessarily because of performance, I think. Then they are saying use EX2015. Nowadays, I'm a bit confused. What is ES2016? Is Xmas Script 6 or not?
Yeah, I think so. Basically, all the new stuff that aren't yet really supported, but you can use them through transpilers.
Yeah, so if you want to use in the browser, you used to use transpilers and deal with it. You know. So those were guidelines. Now, this is the confusing part. Is this still part of this article, or is it a new article? It talks about JavaScript for API services and workers. Yeah. Well, it's probably from the same article, but since it has too many linked sections pointing to other articles, you never know. So there is an article about JavaScript. There is a part about JavaScript for API services and workers. And then there is another part below, JavaScript for UI applications.
Basically, he provides a list of different tools that would help you achieve it. Well, no, different articles, I think. Yeah, there are the links to articles. Yeah.
So this is a meta article.
Yes.
Testing in JavaScript and final thoughts. Well, basically, not really much, anything new, probably just a compilation of links to good articles that talk about all these things that are devised in more detail. Okay, next topic we are going to comment is about isomorphic or universal JavaScript. So basically, isomorphic JavaScript is JavaScript that can generate the same output either whether it runs on the server or on the browser. So for instance, on the server, if you run Node.js, you could have the same code that generates the same pages as it would if it was regular JavaScript on the browser side. So it talks about three main reasons developers rave about isomorphics are better search engine optimization, because if the pages can be rendered on the server side, the HTML is already rendered. It doesn't rely on JavaScript to render those pages. So it's always good for generating rightly indexable content. Better performance. This is more, well, you can either generate the same pages on the server side or on the browser side. If you defer the generation of the pages to the browser side, you can rely on code already loaded on the browser, and eventually it will be presenting the page views in a faster way. Better maintainability, I'm not sure what this could mean in practice. Because if you have to generate JavaScript on the browser side, and generate pages on the browser side and the server side using, for instance, Node.js, isn't that duplicating the work, or does this rely on existing libraries that simplify that that process?
Yeah, I think that isomorphic universal JavaScript is actually that would run there and there without much additional work for you. So yeah. if you think about a single web page apps, as you know, with tools like AngularJS or BackboneJS or probably React, which is popular now, then you just simply load one single page and then you interact with it and it updates and provides new information, does it all in JavaScript. But your code is isomorphic universal, so you can render that HTML also on the server side, and you can like even switch in some cases between single web page app to normal pre-generated pages, and that could be useful for a search engine optimization, for example.
Yeah. Well, I believe, as mentioned here, that you could use, for instance, a headless browser like PhantomJS, and you basically would solve the problem of rendering HTML on the browser side and on the server side. So PhantomJS would probably crawling the same pages generated with JavaScript, and you obtain a static version of the page.
Well, I can provide an example, maybe not that's HTML rendering related, but where simply we find it useful. So in application encounter that we develop, we have an API that returns some kind of data, and then we on the browser side have controllers that takes this data and process it, post-process it, format it, and then present it somewhere in the page. But there was a use case where we needed to make to display already this post-process data from the API too. So what we did, we simply reused those same files, controllers that we have on the browser side, reuse them on the server side and provide additional API, like version 2, more abstract with post-process data. And it was easy thing to do because they both are JavaScript files and it's easy to run them both on server side and browser side. So it's just one of the use cases that we had.
Okay. Well, that could also be a way. Now we are going to talk about the Innovation Award nominees of either PHP classes and JavaScript JS classes components that were nominated in November. So they were voted in December, and then in January the results come out. So now we can talk about them. We are going to start precisely by talking about the nominees of JS classes. Arturus, which ones would you like to comment?
Well, the both that are about to comment are from the same author, Christian Wich, probably for friends. And first one is a JavaScript include package, which allows you to dynamically include different components of the web, like the other JavaScript file or HTML or CSS in a web page. So it's a jQuery plugin, I think.
Yeah.
As an example. So you can include any other files that you need, and the plugin would know how to include it to use script hack on JS.
Yeah, it's not just CSS. JavaScript, it is also CSS. And
that's what I'm telling. So that's why it's interesting. And Christian got 1 year server license IP to country for this package. And the second one that he also submitted is also an interesting. It's called jQuery script parameters, and basically what it does when you include the JavaScript in your HTML, you can, as usual, append some parameters to URL, for example, but there is no way to retrieve them in your script. So this jQuery plugin can parse that URL and provide you some information about it. And you can see from where the script was loaded in the code, or have any additional parameters to enact on them. So that's actually some usage that I haven't thought of, and that yeah. was interesting. And as I said, it also came from the Christian conference. I think that's all on my part for JS classes.
Yeah, so on my behalf, I also would like to comment on one remaining package that may. Let me zoom the page and share. So this is a package by Valorema from Estonia. Should be your neighbor, I suppose.
Yeah.
At least in the map, it shouldn't be
almost
that far. So he actually submitted a component for sending forms and passing parameters to the server. And the good thing is that it can also send requests also via AJAX put and pass those parameters in the body. So when you want to send an arbitrary request with some parameters in JSON format rather than being post or get, you can use this object to send the requests to the server. And for this, got one book from Pact. One thing that I wanted to comment regarding the Innovation Award is that now that we reach the end of the computation of the results for the year 2015, now we know who are the winners. In the case of JavaScript and Innovation Award, the winner by individually was Anders Toth. So he was the first. He earned this award, becoming in the first place with 6 packages and 23 points. But it was followed by other also good contributions from Suresh Kumar from India with 4 packages and 13 points. Then Jackson Noto with 3 packages and 10 points. Christian Vig, 4 packages and 9 points. Diego La Monica, 2 packages and 8 points. Tied with Stefan Schaffer from Australia. Arthur Sozins did not show up as he promised, but he still achieved the 5th place and is tied with the other two with 3 packages and 8 points. Then is followed by Gianluca Zanferrari from Netherlands with 1 package and 7 points. Dusan Boskic from, I think it's Bosnia, right? Serbia, sorry. With 2 packages and 7 points, tied with Gianluca Ferrari. And finally, France, Joseph Brun, 10th place with 2 packages and 6 points. And for this, let me just show it very quickly. The winner, in this case, Anders Toth, is going to earn, I don't know if you can see it very well, this is the trophy. Actually, this is the base trophy. The one that is going to get is going to show here his name and the Innovation Award winner 2015 inscription there. And that is for individuals. And you also get one of these PHP elephants, which all JavaScript developers want. Or not. I don't know. And then this year again, we had the Innovation Award also by country, which unfortunately in the JS classes did not have as much participation in the last year. So Hungary won with the points and packages of Underspath. So Hungary is in first place. And for that, Underspath was going to get another trophy just to say that he is the winner by country representing the team of Hungary. So anyway, in second place comes India with 6 packages and 20 points, France with 7 packages and 19 points, United States with 4 packages and 11 points, Australia with 2 packages and 8 points, Latvia with 3 packages and 8 points, tied also with Italy with 2 packages and 8 points, then Serbia 2 packages and 7 points, Netherlands 1 package and 7 points, and then Austria with 2 packages and 6 points. So this year was not very much participated as the PHP Innovation Award that got a record participation in 2015. I hope in 2016 things start getting better and people participate more. So this is all for the JavaScript Innovation Award in 2015. In 2016, it already started, but we start commenting on the winners in the following month. Anyway, practically we have reached to the end of this podcast. So I'd like to thank Artus again for coming, giving his input. So on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye.